In this segment, I will firstly discuss Vishnu and Shiva and a few myths regarding them. Furthermore, I will start discussing the Upanishad and the creation of being. So firstly, the circle of Prabha and Saraswati is in which the nature of the universe is explored. The circle is an important symbol in Hindu mythology. Devdutt Patnaik says that the circle is the most spontaneous of natural shapes. It's taken by the horizon, by stars, planets, and bubbles. It best represents the Hindu universe because Hindus see the world as being timeless, fetterless, boundless, cyclical, and infinite. The universe is the medium through which the divine presents itself. And hence, for Hindus, every element of this universe can serve as a window to the divine. Now I'm going to be talking about Brahma. Brahma is a major god in the Hindu trinity of Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu. Here is a description of Brahma. God as a creator looks like a priest chanting Vedic hymns and holding in his hands instruments of ritual. Every ritual concluded with a chant, Shanti, 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 which means peace. Peace is the aim of every ritual. Peace comes when one comes to term with the three worlds. Personal world, the cultural world, and the natural world. For that, one needs to appreciate the world in its totality, from every point of view. That is what Brahma does with his four heads facing four directions. For Hindus, Brahma is God who creates the world. The world he creates is known as Brahmad. This world is not just the outer objective world governed by mathematical principles. It is also the inner subjective world of thoughts and feelings. According to Vedic scriptures, God does not create this world. He simply made all creatures aware of it. Awareness leads to discovery. Discovery is creation. The world discovered by Brahma is embodied in the goddess. She has always existed, even when no one observed her. For Brahma, the goddess is Shatarupa, she who takes infinite form. Shatarupa is Saraswati, goddess of knowledge. For in her infinite form, she reflects the answer to Brahma's question, "Who am I?" This question is the impulse of creation. It made God open his eyes and look at the goddess. Saraswati is goddess as embodiment of knowledge. She is the world that informs and inspires. She wears no jewels or cosmetics and drapes herself in a plain white sari with no desire to allure. She must be sought out. She rides a heron, the symbol of concentration, on a gander, the symbol of intellectual discrimination, because it is believed to possess the ability to separate water and milk from a mixture. She holds in her four hands a lute, a book, a pen, and a string of memory, difficult to acquire, yet eternally faithful. She is the container of all answers. Now we'll discuss Shiva. This is a particular story which can be called the Pillar of Fire. The purpose of the story is to show that Shiva is in the Trinity, the greater God. He is so detached from things worldly that the extent of his power has no boundaries. Like the Pillar of Fire, he has neither beginning nor end, no top or base. So, Pillar of Fire. Brahma and Vishnu were once embroiled in an argument as to who was greater than whom. "I am the father of all conscious beings, including you," said Brahma to Vishnu. "You were born in a lotus that emerged from my navel. This makes me your creator," said Vishnu to Brahma. In the course of the argument, a pillar of fire appeared between Brahma and Vishnu. Brahma took the form of a goose and flew upward to find its top. Vishnu took the form of a boar and dug into the earth to find its base. Neither was successful. From the pillar emerged Shiva. Both Brahma and Vishnu realized Shiva, embodiment of the pillar of fire, was Mahadev, greater than any dev. He was even greater than both of them, because his origin and his end was not known. The difference between the world-affirming Vishnu and the worldly-renouncing Shiva is expressed in their representation. Vishnu bedecks himself with ornaments and silks and sandal paste. Shiva smears himself with ash, wraps himself in animal skin, mats his hair, and lets a serpent slither around his neck. Vishnu is associated with domestic fertile cows, Shiva with the virile yet untamed bull. Vishnu is associated with this ocean of milk. As Ram, he sits on a throne. As Krishna, he is associated with gardens and battlefields. Shiva is associated with snow-capped mountains, caves, and cremation grounds. Vishnu is surrounded by all things auspicious and desirable, such as symbols of power, pleasure, and prosperity. Shiva is surrounded by all things inauspicious, undesirable, such as ghosts and dolls. Vishnu clearly is a member of society, distinguishing between the appropriate and the inappropriate. Shiva is the eternal outsider, refusing to discriminate between gods and demons. For Vishnu, devotees offer bright, fragrant flowers such as champak and processed milk products such as butter and sweet. Shiva is content with water, raw, unboiled milk, and the flower of poisonous plants, such as Dhatur. So Ayyappa is also known as Harihari-sutta, the son of Vishnu and Shiva. This deity is an attempt to reconcile the devotees of Shiva and Vishnu. He was born after Shiva embraced Vishnu's female form Mohini. He was raised by a king of Kerala who called him Maniganta. He grew up to be a great warrior who could tame tigers and lions. Like Vishnu, he fought demons and made the earth a safer place. Like Shiva, he renounced his claim to the throne and lived a celibate existence atop a hill. A male form is essentially incomplete and presupposes the existence of a female form. God cannot be incomplete. Hence, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva have female counter. There is Sarasvati for Brahma, Lakshmi for Vishnu, and Shakti for Shiva. Together, these three couples embody the Hindu understanding of the ultimate divine. Imagine a six-pronged star. In the middle is God. Opposite Vishnu is Lakshmi. Opposite Sarasvati is Brahma. Opposite Shakti is Shiva. Brahma creates, Vishnu sustains, and Shiva destroys. While Sarasvati, Lakshmi, and Shakti embody knowledge, wealth, and power respectively. The male forms of the divine are associated with verbs, creating, sustaining, and destroying, while the female forms of the divine are associated with nouns, knowledge, wealth, power. Gods do, goddesses are. Gods are active, goddesses are passive. Goddesses may be knowledgeable. Mistake. Goddesses may be knowledge, wealth, and power, but it is gods who are knowledgeable, wealthy, and powerful. Thus, the male form of divinity represents the subject, he who is sensitive to life and he who responds to life. The female form of divinity represents the object, she who is life. In a story, the goddess marries Shiva, the hermit, and makes him a householder. She forces him to open his eyes and see the mirror in her hand. Not by shutting his eyes, but by opening them can God see himself. The goddess is the object, the mirror, the world. God is the subject, the reflection, the self. Without her, he cannot know himself. Without him, she has no purpose. Both validate each other's existence. Sometimes devotees identify the creative, sustaining, and destructive aspects of God in one entity. Narayan of Vaishnavas, or Shiva of Shaivas, is the supreme manifestation of God. The three goddesses are seen as one, Adi Maya Shakti, or simply Devi, the supreme manifestation of goddess. God is spirit, goddess is matter. God is soul, goddess is substance. God is the observer, goddess is the observation. God establishes artificial values. Goddess is natural phenomena. God is the divine within all beings. Goddess is the divine all around beings. One cannot exist without the other. Without either, there is neither. So now, we're going to quickly talk about what propels the evolution and shaping of the universe. So the Veda is the earliest compilation of Hindu hymns. It is at least 4,000 years old. It wonders how creation began. Origins. In the beginning, there was neither being nor non-being, neither sky, earth, nor what is beyond and beneath. What existed? For whom? Was there water? Death, immortality, night, day? Whatever there was, there must have been one, the primal one, self-created, self-sustained by his own heat, unaware of himself, until there was a desire to know himself. That desire is the first seed of the mind, say seers, binding non-being with being, what was above and what was below, seed or soil, who knows, who really knows, even the gods came later. Perhaps only the primal being knows, perhaps not. This is from a Rig Samhita. The Veda is believed to be of non-human origin, a container of timeless wisdom. Brahma sang these hymns out when he first saw Saraswati. They were transmitted to human seers known as rishis. The seers who sat around Brahma heard four collections of Vedic mantras emerging from his forehead. These collections or samhitas came to be known as Rig, Sam, Yajur, Atharva. Of these, Rig Samhita is supposed to be the purest transmission. In the earliest phase of Hinduism, Vedic hymns were chanted mechanically during rituals known as yajna to invoke divine power and change the workings of the world. Kings were the patrons of these grand ceremonies. Then a revolution took place. Sages such as Yajnavalkya and kings such as Janaka challenged the mechanical chanting of mantras. They focused on the ideas being communicated through the hymns. As a result, 1,000 years later, after the Vedas were compiled, the Upanishad came into being. This body of scripture is known as Vedanta, the pinnacle of Vedic wisdom. It states that creation involved the splitting of the primal being who is identified as Purusha. In the beginning was the self, the Purusha, alone, afraid, wondering what made him lonely and fearful. If there was loneliness and fear, there could also be company and pleasure. Restless, he split himself. This is taken from the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad. So the split portion of the Purush is identified as Prakriti. The two complement each other. In common parlance, Purush is translated to mean man, while Prakriti means nature. Thus, Purush can also mean culture, while Prakriti can also mean woman. These translations suggest that in the Hindu world, man is equal to culture and woman to nature. Such an interpretation reinforces the popular belief that the Hindu world is patriarchal, with men deciding how the world should be. There is an element of truth here, but the Veda and the Upanishad were not concerned with gender politics or social issues. While these did influence their thoughts, the primary motivation for these scriptures were metaphysics. Biological symbols were tools to explain complex ideas as to how the world came into being and why. In the above narrative, the split is not of an androgynous being into man and woman. The split is between the subject and the object. The subject is the conscious being, that which feels, and the object is the stimulating environment, that which is felt. The subject is Purush, the object is Prakriti. Purush is the soul, Prakriti is mind and matter. Purush is the inner reality, without gender, name, or form. Prakriti is the outer reality of gender, names, and forms. Purush is still unchanging, unaffected by time or space. It is that which makes the body alive. Prakriti is restless and ever-changing, a product of history and geography. It is the encasement of the soul. Purush is perfect, hence not of this world, to be defined by negation, nidhi-nidhi, not this, not that. Prakriti is everything in this world, hence never perfect, to be defined by affirmation, iti-iti, this too, that too.